Hello and welcome to another episode of Tactical Tips. I'm Rich.
I'm Pat.
I'm Tom.
And today we have a special guest joining us to talk all about turtles. So we've got Dom with us.
Hi, I'm Dom. As you know me, I'm a Scorn player. I love to take walks in the park, smash guys at War Machine and listen to George Michael with Richard, but only with Ken.
What makes you so happy? Yeah. My wife is out the room. It's okay. It's good. Excellent. So today we are talking around building lists around powerful pieces. War Machine has a huge spread of models. Each of those models are on a power curve, and we've already talked about how the game is really balanced. However, there are definitely models that have a certain strength or group of characteristics that are worth building a list around. So what we're going to cover today is talking through why we'd want to do that, what that means, how we can do that, and we're going to be using the Mighty Mighty Turtles to talk through it. So let's start with having a chat about what do we mean by building around a model. So Pat's really good at building around models, and so is Tom with the Storm Raptor. Who wants to take this one, building around a model?
So I'll start us off. When we talk about building around a model, what I think is you make a list that is really trying to take advantage of strengths of a particular model, maximize those strengths and also minimize its weaknesses. And although probably every list is doing that to some extent, you really start building around when those models become the focus of your list and everything else in the list is only really there to support them or to show up their weaknesses.
Exactly that. And we're talking about turtles today because they're a great example in Scorn. Turtles are the siege animatrax. So they're really fast turtles that go speed 8 and hit and shoot everything. It's a really good example of that because they're very strong and they're strong enough to build around them. So do you think that models need to be inherently strong or at a certain point on a power curve to build around them? Or can you do this with any model?
You should build around strong models, but you could try to build around weak models.
Like a Storm Raptor, Tom.
Might not always work out, but you can. It's applicable to every model, but preferably a model that can do a lot of work, like a Siege Animatrax, like the Red Battle Engine, the Conversions Battle Engine, but preferably things with a lot of output so you can get value out of it.
Okay. Cool. So let's use that as a stopping point. So when we might want to, you already started us off with this. So it's we've got a few different reasons to build around a model. One is just output. But would you consider that like, do you need to skew for that? Or does it need to be output of a certain type?
I don't think you need to skew any models if you go for building around a model. Yeah, as Pat said, compensating its weaknesses and enhancing its strengths can be even a Voodras, which is the list is built around, which is not considered to be good alone, but really nasty with the right list.
Which one's that one?
The Voldras with Epic Baldur.
Yeah. So this is where you're taking a model that's got some strength and just turning it up with the armor skew, right?
Yes, exactly. I think you should just look for one characteristic, depending on defense or armor or whatever, and push this to the next level, which can already help a lot.
So Dom, you're an experienced Scorn player and you've played a lot of the Siege Animatrax. What strengths do you think it has that makes it worth building around in a list?
I think it has great potential both in melee and in range. You have a melee attack which knockdowns on hit, so can also fight high defense targets, very reliable. But it also has a gun better against opponent's heavies because of the volume fire rule. So it hits at reliable red 7. So you hit opponent's heavies on 5s, which is pretty massive. And you have a high shooting range of 12 inches. And you can reposition back 3 inches. You have so many rules on this model's card. It's ridiculous, to be honest.
No, it's perfectly fine and balanced, Tom. It's absolutely fine. When would you want to do that? Like the Siege Animatrax is really powerful. That doesn't mean you need to build a list around it. So you could take those. You could take battle engines like the Vlad-1 battle engines with so Vlad-1 on there and the Kador battle engines. You've got the Stormstriders. So what do you look for, and what makes you think instead of just taking this as a piece in your army, you actually want to build a list around it and focus around it? Because you're giving something away to do this. You're usually in the form of increased support or putting a lot of your resources into one model as opposed to having pieces across your army that can all do things independently. So why would you want to do that?
Apparently because it's very strong in this case. If I have the feeling that the points for the added support and the build itself equal up its output compared to other heavies or units you have available in your faction, I would always do it. And it, for myself, it fits my playstyle to get a super piece. Yes, brings the apocalypse and not 20 small soldier.
Brings the apocalypse. Oh, amazing. So we have to get above a certain power curve. So if we're building around the piece, it has to be because the sum of that build, the piece itself and the support, gets us to something that is better than just having individual pieces that work independently. Is that what we're getting to?
Yeah, I think so. It makes me, when you put it like that, it makes me think of every model in the game having a kind of a power rating, if you like. You could compare it to points, but of course, points don't always equal power as you spend points on other things as well. But if you imagine that every model has a certain amount of power for its points, you could just take a lot of models that are independently powerful, like you mentioned, and your army would be approximately even in terms of power with anyone else that did the same. But if you identify a model that has a huge amount of power, you might instead choose to build around it. And by doing so, you have its large power value, if you will. And then all of the support that you're taking multiplies that power. So rather than spending 20 points on a battle engine that is worth 20 points in terms of output, you spend 40 points on a pair of battle engines, and then you multiply that effect with all of your support, and you hope to get something that's more powerful than if you were just taking independently strong pieces.
It seems to be the word power comes up a lot with it. So whenever we're talking about it, and a lot of the models that we've used examples already, the ones that are being built around have some way to boost and independently increase accuracy, increase damage. With turtles, it's the volume fire and the increasing power on large bases, and the D3 plus one shots. With the Storm Strider, it's things like the boost mechanic. So is there something in there? We have to have something that we can leverage to make this worthwhile.
I think so. Like, it's kind of hard to build around like something that's like easily removed. Like, you can try to do that with like a fast hitting unit like Retribution Halberdiers and to an extent like Stixis Raiders, but like they can be very easily removed, which makes it so that if you commit a lot of points to support it, it can make its point back. Whereas something like really hard to kill, like a battle engine or a colossal, makes this a lot worth it.
That's really interesting. So it gets onto something that Dom's really good at, and that's why he's on the cast talking about the Scorn list and not me. But with the turtles, you can get to a stage where the turtles, if you lose them a turn earlier, then it can have a real problem because you're putting so much into that model. Do you think with turtles specifically, we'll come on to the list we're talking about, which is the tubby list, do you think it's because they've got a lot of flexibility, you can build around it? And if you have something that's too linear, or too narrow, it's not effective to build around? Because turtles, they shoot, they hit, they're fast, they do everything. They have all the rules. Whereas if there is just a beat to it, maybe it won't be as effective. What do you think?
I think they are that great because they have that flexibility. Compared to some heavies in Scorn, which are pretty one-sided, like a Bronzeback or let's say a Cannoneer or whatever, they have a specific role, and the turtle, which comes at nearly the same cost, can do both of these roles. Not in a way a Bronzeback could kill a heavy. Turtle has not that much damage output, to be fair. But it has shooting output and melee output. The flexibility is awesome in this game because you can adapt to certain situations.
That's really different to the Mac 2 type of building around that, which is the other Scorn list. This is where you've got the cats, and then you add in Redeem to support the cats to give them dodge, and then you add in the Wheel Breakers to give the cats tough, to make it even more difficult, and then you add in Mac 2 to give the cats tough and stay deaf and dodge. So with that, we're layering things around, not just a single model, but a unit, but it's the same theory. Do you think they're equally as flexible?
The cats, I think they are not as flexible as the turtles. That's why I picked the turtles over the cats in terms of my Scorn evolution in games. I think the cats are very strong, but they have a significant weakness. If the opponent can hit reliable enough and hard enough, they will suffer very badly, and the opponent has grievous wounds. Let's not talk about this one. But there are tools to cancel the cats pretty easily. not all the opponents will have it, but they can be canceled. And if you have a flexible piece, it gets harder for your opponent to cancel it.
So do we land up with building around one piece as saying it has to be flexible, powerful, and also hard to counter? And if it's too limited or if it's easily countable, it's just not worth putting building a list around it.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, I think so. I think because building around a list is multiplying the effect of those powerful pieces, the more flexible they are, the more flexible the list is going to be because it's hinging on them. So if you take a model that can do well in a lot of different situations and then multiply that to become your list, it means your list should be able to do well against a lot of different opponents. Whereas if you're trying to skew something like, for example,
the Storm Raptor.
Yeah, like the Storm Raptor, you might have a few very specific strengths that make you good in a couple of specific matchups, but you'll also bring with you the weaknesses of that model, which will make your list weak into more things.
Cool. Something I've been asked at this stage is, if you're building around a piece, does that mean the piece is broken? So Turtles in a minute, it's not huge because Scorn aren't massively played across the international meta. However, when people face the Turtles, quite commonly here, that thing's just broken.
The question is, how do we define broken? They are certainly very strong, and I can understand if people are frustrated because they are, in no terms, a fun game piece, but a highly competitive game piece. So I would say they could be adapted to get them back to a more normal level, but the tournament competitions, they can be handled.
Right, okay. Well, we've done a lot of talking about Turtles, so if we run through a list then and see what this looks like in practice. So we'll leave the Cats at home because we've talked about them. They're rubbish now. People got Grievous Wings. Don't bother with those. We're going with the Turtles. So Don, what's the current hotness of the Turtle list?
The current hotness, I think it's still the list I played at WTC, which is basically Batman Tubby, which is Lord Domina Rashad, which in a Winds of Death list with some lights. It's a Cyclops Raider for Snipe, a Kreia, double Shaman, and you will play double Turtle, one unit of Venter Weavers with a unit attachment, a small unit of Slingers, two X-Tola Soul Wards, one Mortitok Willbreaker, one Venator Ducker, and the large unit of Beast Handlers.
Cool. Lots of good stuff in there, lots of shooting, lots of fun things. How does it typically work? Because I think if you watch against WTC, it's very much based around the Turtles, but typically, if you look at how that list plays, you know, what's the typical deployment and how does that list typically win games?
Typically, the list works pretty easy. You shoot stuff off the table and...
Just, okay.
Finally, the Scorn list, Winds of Death, became a pretty strong shooting list, which nobody thought Scorn could do in the beginning. But you have units that hit reliable and hard enough. So you use your Venator Weavers as a backward unit with reposition to snipe off enemy troopers. You can snipe off solos with the Cyclops Shamans because they have boostable shots. And you will use the Seed's Animantorax to remove pieces from range at first. And at some point in the game, this is the important part about the list, you have to train this and find this point. You can push in the Turtles block scenario because your opponent does not have any models left to kill the Turtles.
So you kill everything and then win on scenario.
Yes, basically.
So one of the things you mentioned there is really interesting to me because it's a bit different to how I've had opponents use that list against me, which is, you said you play it as a very heavy shooting list and you hold the Turtles back and only commit them once they can be safe. Is that right?
At some point you have to commit one turtle earlier to stop being blitzed in scenario or for other reasons, but you do not want to push both turtles in too early in the game, because once you lose the turtles, you lose a lot of hitting power in melee and you lose a lot of sustainability because they have a lot of boxes and high armor, and yeah, this list is missing exactly these two stats.
Yeah.
One thing I noticed playing against this model was they're quite good at picking on lone heavies because of their ability to charge in, knock down the heavy and kill or cripple it, hopefully taking out its ability to shake and then reposition away. So against a single heavy, a siege animal troops can go in and grind it down, either killing it or crippling it over a couple of turns, and be completely safe. But if you have to commit earlier against multiple enemy heavies, you can take out one, but then the others will kill you in retaliation. Does that sound about right?
Yes, exactly.
I mean, that feels exactly why you want to hang back with it when I play them. You're looking to maybe see if you can pick up one or two heavies, almost for giving nothing away, apart from scenario. And I think that's the weakness of the list. You've got the ability to put such a huge amount of firepower out in such a concentrated and accurate way, and then be very safe. Everything's got 3-3 position, everything's got long threat range. So you can quite easily take heavies off the table from range before having to commit them. And I noticed when I started playing it initially, you would send the heavies in, the turtles in earlier. You'd be able to knock down, kill one, maybe shoot and ding up another and back up. But then as soon as they've traded with the heavies, the rest of the list, it just feels a bit like glorified support. The Reavers, they can pot up and they can do things into other heavies, but it starts falling apart pretty quickly, especially if you have to bring the rest of the army forward to stay relevant on scenario. Really, it wants to be staying back and just sandpaping you off until you've got nothing left, and then you can send in and commit the heavies and they run the table.
Mm. So one thing we discussed before was how when you're building around this kind of model, the rest of the army is there to support it and improve its strengths or show up its weaknesses. How is this army working to support the turtles?
So basically, the turtles have a lot of rules which enhance. They can buff themselves basically by hitting down the enemy heavies or whatever. But this army has a lot of other skills. The Willbreaker can give them a puppet master. So, and because the turtles are cavalry models, their charge attack is boosted anyways. And so you get a boosted attack with a reroll on the charge attack for a knockdown, for example. Another point is the X taller soul wards, which are really important in this matchup because they can hand out idle sight and magical weapons to your most valuable pieces in this army with a lot of attacks. You get a lot of idle sight attacks or magical weapon attacks, which help the turtles shoot, for example, manot heavies or enemy models with stealth, because this list is not very strong against stealth models in general. But the biggest buff boards for the turtle is probably Rashad. At one point, he has Carnivore, so he gives them +2 to hit against living models, which lets them even more reliable hit like Warp Wolves or Legion Heavies. And he has a very strong feat, which effectively gives them +2 to hit and +2 to damage rolls and +2 armor for one round, which makes them hit harder, hit more reliable, and be more sustainable in the retaliation. So you have various stages of direct support for the turtles. I think one level of support you do not get at the first point is that this list has a lot of abilities to remove opponent solos, like, for example, Ragman or Gorman, which could lower the armor of the turtles, because you have boostable ghost shots, you have arc nodes everywhere, so you remove a lot of solos, blocking models, and the like.
I think I'd add to that with the list and with Tubby. One of the weaknesses of the turtles, I think, is small-based infantry, especially high-def small-based infantry. Their gunshots and certainly early game when they're shooting, the gunshots are rat 5 base, and as Dom said, they go up to rat 6, rat 7 for medium and large base models. So actually rat 5 struggles to hit even pikemen on D3 plus 1 shot, so you get 3 shots. You're going to be able to hit 1 or 2 pikemen a turn. And you don't want to be spending those ranged attacks that we can buff, and I'll come on to that, against small-based infantry. So having Reavers that have CRA, I think, is really important because you can use them to clear off the chaff and the small-based pieces and also spot removal and get the maximum amount out of the turtles. You can focus the turtles on putting shots into the heavies or the medium bases. And the second bit with Tubby, again, those support pieces like Ragman taking a turtle from armor 20 to armor 18 is a big deal. If you lose a turtle a turn early, that typically puts you in a very bad spot in the game. If you keep a turtle a turn later, especially because it's a battle engine and doesn't have any systems, so if you leave it on one or two blocks, it just feels like the end of the world for your opponent. If you get an extra turn out of a turtle you've committed, it's huge. And by taking away pieces like Ragman, that's really important. Now, Turtle really, really struggled to kill Ragman. You don't want to go into melee with him because that's not the point of the list. It's the attrition, stay back and shoot. So having the scalpel and the extolers can give eye of sight to the slingers. The slingers can run and be arc nodes. So the slingers or the arc nodes can see through stealth. They can see through clouds. Tubby's got a number of ways to scalpel out models with Sunder Spirit and with Breath of Corruptions. So all of a sudden, you've got a number of ways to take out key pieces that threaten the turtles very, very easily. You've got the Reavers that can use the their accuracy to clear off infantry. And you've also got Tubby's feet and the buffs or the debuffs to make sure that that power 13, 14, 15 on the Reaver gun on the turtle is actually shooting at 17 consistently, if not 19. So it's dice plus one against lower armor heavies. And all of this while having protection through things like the Breath of Corruption to stop charge lanes of single wound infantry into the turtles, and also having the feet to make the turtles effectively plus two armor or reduce the opponent by minus two death. So you've got this list where the turtles are really powerful inherently, and all of the areas where they're weak, the rest of the list either helps them to be stronger or deals with themselves. And I think that's what makes the list so powerful. It's just a real toolbox that actually covers anything. And I'm not sure there's a huge amount outside of very, very heavy SKUs. So very, very heavy armor SKUs or very heavy infantry SKUs that this list can't deal with. And even then, it's still a game, right? What do you think, Dom?
I think because of the flexibility you just mentioned, the list has game into almost everything in this game. You struggle with lists that forbid you shooting or play a hard armor skew, a hard stealth skew, or like 50 infantry models, because at some point you come to a limit where your attacks are not enough.
I mean, and Pat, you play one of the lists that I think Tubby actually struggles into in Old Witch 3, because everything we've mentioned apart from the arc nodes, which are, the running and arc nodes, which are maybe two or three spells a turn, everything is shooting predominantly, and then you have the finishers in the turtles to just cripple the rest of it and win on scenario. Old Witch 3 is actually, I think, a really good drop into Tubby because of her spell and her toolkit. But have you played Old Witch 3 into turtles? And I don't know if you played that game or how you found it.
So, go on, Tom.
I've not played it myself, but I've seen it several times at tournaments. And for me, it comes down to Tubby starting to work with his spells to clear Old Witch infantry. And at some point, you will have to push your turtles into melee to kill the opponent's heavies. Because once the heavies are gone, the turtles will not die anymore.
I think that makes sense. I think it depends a little bit on the army composition involved. With the Grimkin side of Old Witch, and with Grimkin in general, what I've found is you can build lists that are very resistant to shooting, and that can force the turtles to commit earlier than they'd like. They can't do enough work to sandpaper the army at range. And if you can force them to commit while you still have a lot of heavies on the table, then you can trade with them in retaliation. And even if you end up trading poorly, for example, a turtle goes in, kills one of your heavies. Next turn, you fail to kill the battle engine, which is a disaster for you. It kills another heavy, and then you finally bring it down. That seems really, really bad. But if the rest of the list is only really there to deal with infantry, as long as you have the last high armor pieces standing, you can still make a game of it.
That feels exactly how turtles work. And how this works is you play, and if you lose a turtle without getting that value, then it feels horrendous. And likewise, if you keep it in play and it stays a turn later, then it's usually just you stomp for the rest of the game. So it kind of brings up a topic on just the weaknesses of building around a piece, which we've touched on a couple of times, and that's just if you lose the piece you're building against too early or you don't have the value from it, then your list falls apart. So I think I've played games with turtles where if you do lose them a turn early or get a bad trade or whatever, then you're looking down at Reavers and a couple of lights going, well, I'm not going to. So I don't know, Dom, have you found with turtles when you're playing it and learning the list, is that true? Is it all come down to whether or not you can keep the turtles alive for long enough?
Yes, exactly. If you lose the turtle too early, you will lose the game, most likely.
So all you have to do is kill the turtle. Trivial, right?
Not that trivial. I think in most of my games with the turtles, I manage to keep them untouched throughout the whole game. Because usually you have them in the fourth aura of the Kriya, so they're resilient against shooting as well. And so it's not really worth for a high amount of players to put any work into the turtles unless they can kill them. And yeah, at some point they will not be able to kill them anymore, and it's hard to find this point.
Do you think it works because they're battle engines and they are always either completely operational or dead, as opposed to, say, doing this with a colossal?
I think this fact, because the turtles can be healed in the Scorn list, and that's why they are untouched. I mean, you can still play mechanics or a caster who can repair a colossal or the objective. So, and in most cases, these pieces stay intact or are removed in one round. At least for my games in Germany.
I mean, turtles feel like a really good example of building around a strong piece. I can't think of another list that is as good at exemplifying what building around a piece is. Are there any other lists we can talk about to try and get some sense on the goods and bads of building around a list? Because turtles are feeling pretty broken right now.
I haven't really played against them, but I've also watched a lot of gameplays with it, and it's like, it comes down, it's similar with all battle engines, just like any models with high point cost. You have to protect them to get values out of them. And turtles are really, I think Repo 3 is like a really important rule on it, because it lets you do work and then move away from it. And like, the best defense against anything in this game is keeping distance away from it.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Yes, reposition is very big on the...
So Tom, I mean, you've played Storm Raptors, you've seen Turtles played as well. Like, what are weaknesses maybe of Turtles overall or this list overall, or just building around a piece? Like, what if you're on the other side of the table, how do you pick this apart?
Well, first I'll try to look at if I have any list that can shut down shooting, like if any, like from blinding lights with Assyria. Blind usually is okay thing to do against battle engines, but it doesn't work against extolers unless you have a really good way of picking it out. Backline support piece. Sometimes terrain can play a big part into limiting what a battle engine can do, because they're a huge base and trying to limit its landing spot can be like an okay way to fight it. But the issue with that is turtles are speed 8, which I think is the fastest battle engine, or just in the huge base in general without buffs. Which and that makes that really difficult, because they have a lot of mobility to just reposition, just be anywhere on the table in very fast. And because they're mostly a range piece, and that makes that even harder.
That's a really interesting point you've narrowed in on straight away. When you speak to most people about the turtles, they complain about the whipping and the rage tokens and the knockdown and the power 18 and the fact they can one round a heavy by charging. Most of our conversation has revolved around the amount of ranged output they can put down first. And it seems to be the way to shut turtles down potentially is to limit their ranged output. So it feels like if you're facing an army and you're trying to figure out how to counter it, understanding why the piece is powerful is really important. And say turtles are actually powerful because of their ability to attrition before they have to commit. And I think going the other way, if you're building around a piece, I think it's really important to understand why it's powerful again, to make sure that you're putting the right support in. Because if you were going nuts, you know, on thinking it's a melee beast, you could be trying to find ways to put in more damage buffs or strength buffs or whatever, or increase its volume of melee attacks with not getting the maximum benefit out of what that piece is. So yeah, really interesting to hear you go straight to like anti-ranged against the turtle. Really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I think ideally you want your list to force a turtle to come into melee with it. Like, because at the end of the day, if it comes into melee, it hopefully can retaliate back with some other piece. Like, if it comes into melee, like at best, it would have 4 attacks at power ranging from power 18 to 22. And even that is really high, and that is really obnoxious that it gets that high and has knockdown. But then at least you have a chance to kill it. Like the losing situation where most people encounter with the turtle is it keeps shooting in the back line and keeps getting incremental values, and then eventually it comes in and then kills your things that can kill it, and then that's why that model is really good, because it can chip in work while it's very safe, and then later on it can nail down the opponent's things that can actually kill it, and then it's GG.
That makes sense. Think about other really powerful pieces you can build around. They all have something that keeps them on the table for longer. So like you've got the taps, which have the shield guards that they make themselves. You've got the cats, which have dodge, stay death, and tough. You've got the storm strider that's got the 1-inch push and ability to just kill everything near it. So it feels like powerful pieces to build around them. They have to have a way of staying on the table, which ties in with the other bits we've been talking around, which is you've got to get maximum value, and that means having enough stuff there to keep them alive, and possibly explains why people, when they build around things that aren't as strong, so just trying to build around one or two beasts and turn beasts up to power 24. I've seen this especially with minions at the minute. I've got lists that get shown to me where it's like, here's a beast and I can rage it and I can put fury on it and I can do all this stuff and it's going to be power 26 and kill everything, but it doesn't win games because you can't keep those pieces alive.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think some factions are inherently better at keeping pieces alive, Scorn being one of the strongest because you have the Agonizer and the Kriya, which can support models in any list, plus, as Dom already mentioned, the healing from Paingivers. So you have a lot of models that aren't specific to a particular caster that can support a wide variety of, in this case, War Beasts or Battle Engines to maximize their output. Another faction that does this really well, of course, is Signar. Haley 2 Stormwall being the original that built around a powerful piece, right? Haley 2 Double Stormwall was a huge thing in Mark 2, and it was a great example of exactly this, using Arcane Shield and Deceleration and Haley's Feet to protect these models as they did work both at range and in melee.
Yeah, think about that. This works exactly the same, didn't it? It had, instead of Breath of Corruption, it had Covering Fire. Instead of the turtles, it had the boostable power 15 guns, and then it had the fists and electro leap late game.
Yeah, it was a slightly more extreme version because it was spending almost its entire points on those two models with about 20 points of support. Whereas in comparison, the Rasheth Winds of Death list looks very balanced indeed.
It's weird. It doesn't feel it. Whenever I build it, it feels that there I should have more points because it feels like you have turtles and stuff, but actually, yes, it's all there. I'm just complaining for no good reason now. I have no right to complain about that list.
So there were two other weaknesses of this kind of list that I wanted to throw in that I was thinking about while you guys were talking. The first is control. Generally speaking, these lists rely on one or two really powerful units or models, and if you have raids to control those models, then the lists can end up in huge problems. So examples of this against battle engines, spells like telekinesis can be very, very strong against a lot of the battle engines. And debuff spells in general can work really, really well if the unit is trying to do a lot of damage. The other weakness that can happen with these lists is because they're putting all of their power, they're channeling all their power through these few models, they tend to be a little more vulnerable to luck because they need those pieces to do the expected amount of work every turn. And they need them, as we already discussed, they need to survive for as long as you anticipate they will. So if you get a little bit unlucky and lose a model too early, or if the model just doesn't do what it's supposed to do that turn, because you've invested so much in it, you often don't have a good backup plan. And so your games can spiral downwards really quickly. Now, one of the cool things about this Rasheth list is you have support models that mitigate both those weaknesses, right? You have Puppet Master or Puppet Strings to give you some protection against bad luck, right? You actually have rerolls available to make sure your models are doing what they're supposed to. And you have some protection from Troll through the Cyclops Shaman, whose Animus lets you remove enemy upkeep spells on your models. So you don't have to worry about them being hit by things like Crippling Grasp, for example.
Yeah.
What is big as well is that you have Castigate, Shutdown, and Dark Mode. So in most cases, you can even prevent casters like Isiria to stick Blinding Light on your turtles by good positioning.
Sorry, Dom. Wait one sec. Is Tom gone? It sounds like he's just walked out.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just a lot of noise.
Yeah, we might just do that section again. I'm just waiting till Tom gets back. Tom? I was expecting to hear in the back. Oh, there's the door. Hello?
Sorry, I had to go get the package from Phillips.
I thought I was going to ask if it was the pizza boy. Cool. Sound. No worries. Dom, are you okay to start from the Castigate bit again, please?
Okay. And another big point of this is that you have Castigate, so you can completely shut down opponents' Arknotes, and you can even prevent casters like Etheria to stick Blinding Light on your engines by good positioning and just using Castigate.
So again, it's looking at the weaknesses of the list or what the list is weak to, and then finding casters or support pieces or units to eliminate those weaknesses or those threats, or shore up and augment those strengths. And Tubby, actually, yes. Yeah, even some of the things you mentioned there, he does pretty much everything the turtles want or need, he has for them. Like a big, lovable teddy bear. So how do you feel? We talked through some of this there. Like, how do you feel about building around a list? We've talked about some weaknesses where if we lose the piece, it's pretty bad news. If you had the option, what would you go for? Would you look at building around a strong list, or would you err away from it and feel like you're at threat of being diced or losing? Because as we talked about, if you have a bad round, the turtles don't get the work done, or you get diced and they get blown off the table through really hot dice, you're in real trouble. So how do you feel after everything we talked about around building around a strong piece? Do you think it's a good idea, bad idea? What do you think?
I think it depends on the piece you're trying to build around. Like, hopefully the model you're building around for has some already inherent strength, and you can amplify it, and it doesn't have too many weaknesses you're trying to cover. And that usually leads to a very successful list. Whereas the model you're trying to build for has like a lot of inherent weakness and is not very good at outputting it, then it's not that great of an idea.
Would the Storm Raptor fit into that category, Tom?
Yes, so that doesn't do anything very particularly well, and has a lot of downsides.
I think to go a bit deeper on that point, one of the things you have to consider when you're looking at what list you want to take to a tournament or what pair you want to take, you need to be thinking about what you're likely to see and what you expect to face in the meta. And you need to think, how does this piece that I want to build around actually work in the current meta, right? Can I mitigate the control effects that I'm likely to see? Does the strength that this piece have work really well against some of the boogeymen that I'm worried about? Basically, is it worth taking this piece and investing in it, considering the likely answers that are going to be out there? Does it exploit them in enough ways?
Yeah, that's really interesting. So it's narrowed down not just what's the strengths and weaknesses of this list, but if there's a lot of things out there that specifically shut down this one model, then I probably shouldn't be building around it. So even though models to build around can be really, really flexible on the table, they can be quite inflexible in a pairing.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah.
Makes sense. So are there any other examples of good lists you want to talk about before we start wrapping this up and summarizing on what we can learn about building around powerful pieces? Are there any other good lists that you guys have seen around the tables whereby it's reliant around one or two key things?
So one list that springs to mind is Convergence, who are propped up, I think, in the competitive environment right now, are propped up by their battle engines, the Transfinite Emergence Projectors. Another example of a very, very powerful piece. Now, I don't think Convergence lists support their battle engines quite so well as Scorn. They don't have as many support pieces aside from their Warcaster that really enable them to do a lot of work. And I also think that the TEP doesn't have as much flexibility. But one thing that it really has going for it is even if it doesn't have overall flexibility, it has flexibility in what targets it can deal with, right? Because of its ability to choose the volume of fire, the number of dice to hit and to damage, you can reliably have it deal with any kind of target you might be facing, which gives it a kind of flexibility that makes it very enticing to build around.
Yeah. This is making so much sense. I'm thinking about so many lists where got people who've built around a piece and have taken one thing and really skewed it, but it doesn't have flexibility, and that's not powerful enough to build a list around it effectively. It's like the Galleon that can get to like power 28, stuff like that. Yeah, it seems like flexibility and shoring up weaknesses is just key. I agree. The taps have got everything. They've got high def, low def, volume of attacks, high power output, whatever you want, they've got something for it.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Rich. It makes me think of another, which is another mistake you can make when building around a piece, is you throw on buffs or support that it doesn't need. So yeah, we talked a lot about how Rasheth Winds of Death supports all of the turtle's weaknesses and complements what it's doing, but it also plays an important role in the list. But for example, one thing you might see is people sometimes get carried away by how much they can skew a particular model, and they might get really excited about, oh, I can make this bronze back kill any model in the game. And that's fine, but it's not a strength you need to enhance, you know? Your unbuffed bronze back is killing 95% of models in the game already.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Building your list to beat that other 5% that you may never see on the table is a bit of a waste of time.
Yeah. And you're not getting anything extra for it. And that feels like another big point with like the turtles, with the tap, whatever it is. The list is taking that and turning it up, not just in terms of its output and stats, i.e. I've gone from power X to power Y, but I'm getting more value out of it every turn. And value is measured in terms of the total amount of points you take off the table. Whereas if you're building just to enhance a stat like a power, all you're doing is going from I mash this heavy to I absolutely mash this heavy. You're still only killing one heavy. Your actual output isn't changing at all. Any other points on building around a single piece, building around a powerful piece that you want to go over?
I think I like the example of Epic Baldur with the Vultras, which is a pretty... yeah, normal piece in most of the list, but in this list levels up because it's spellward by itself. Sacred Ward, it can be buffed to armor 23, it can charge for free, it heals every turn, and you get a ward template to block charging lanes and spots, which makes this model even harder to remove. And that's why he levels up the piece, and it can be really game determining if you can kill this colossal or not.
Yeah. It feels like it's got a lot of the hallmarks of things we've talked about with the other lists. So you've got a piece that's defensive and that you take its armor out of range of certainly guns, and you've got healing, and it has such a huge amount of boxes, and it's a large base that can't be affected by grievous wounds. You've got a wall template that will stop heavies getting to it or limit the amount that can get to it. And then it can trade very easily once heavies come in by just mashing them with its fists. And it also has that boostable gun, and it has a way as well. I think, does it have a way to clear infantry? It's got the AOE and everything gets zapped in it. Has it still got that thing?
Yeah.
So it feels like we've got a bit of a pattern emerging here of the pieces that are really good to build around. They've got attrition, defense, some ranged output to do value without being committed. And they've got ways within the list to survive or potentially survive having things come in so they can have that extra turn and getting value out.
Yeah, but I don't think it has to be a colossal or... alike or a battle engine which you have to build around. Some of the newer Trollbot lists rely heavily on Trollbot champions, which are different aspects of the level, which are hard to kill, and that's their main focus and not the colossal thing or the many boxes. I think if you want to have a piece, you build your list around, it's hard to kill and stays long in the game.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. That's champion bricks right now are a good example of a unit that the army's building around. And I agree with you that survivability is really, really important. I think especially so when the models are slow like that, because you're condemning yourself to have to run them into your opponent's threat ranges if you want to play the game. So you need to make sure you can take damage and still have that piece survive to enact your plan.
Cool. Feel like we solved it. Done.
Game solved.
Game solved. Yeah. Survival models, make sure you can't kill them, win.
Yes.
So that does give us a good checklist though, right? Of what we should be looking for if we want to answer your question before, Rich, what you should be looking for when you want to build around a model. We said survivability, probably first and foremost.
Yeah.
And then offensive capability. And the thing that we valued most in offensive capability was flexibility. Right,
yes,
being able to deal with multiple different kinds of targets through enhanced accuracy, enhanced damage, ranged and melee output. And then on top of that, any kind of high movement or ability to affect large parts of the table is valuable. And then resistance to things like control and luck can really help as well.
Yeah, Really like that. You can run through all the examples and see that they've got most of those things. And the examples that we talked about, which is this, we know this doesn't really work. You can see where they don't have a lot of them. They've maybe got one, which is the output or the ability to affect an area of the board, but they don't have defense. They don't have flexibility. They don't have movement, etc. So really like that checklist. That's cool. Nice one. So I think we've solved building around a powerful piece. Are there any closing comments that you want to add in? Tom, anything from your... Do you want to run the Storm Raptor through the checklist?
Oh, man, it doesn't actually do any of the checklists. It's like...
the war with Baldur?
Well, it's mostly just Baldur, and then Wuna 1 gives a bird's eye. So it's mostly... It's the other way around. It's like using really good support pieces to support a really shitty model.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. Yeah, it does bring an interesting point though, because we spent the majority of the episode talking about here's a really strong piece, and then you take a really strong piece and you build around it. But you've identified it the other way around, where you've basically said, here are two casters, a caster and a junior caster, that can provide all of those things to a model, and it's just a decision then on what models put into it. And unfortunately, all you had available was a Storm Raptor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any other faction tell me doing flying? Oh, excellent, excellent. Really enjoyed that. I'm going to try and build some lists around other powerful pieces that aren't turtles. And I'll probably get sad and come back to turtles. But anyway, I'll give it a go. All good. All good. So yeah, Pat, anything you want to wrap up on? Nice work on the checklist. Anything else you want to add to that?
No, I think that pretty much covers it. I think, like we said, when you're looking at your own faction, you should be thinking about which of your models hit this checklist and which support pieces you have available. And that should create some sort of short list where you know, okay, my faction can shore up these weaknesses and my most powerful pieces have these strengths. Then maybe you can look at your warcasters and determine how they work, either in terms of further supporting the strengths or mitigating the weaknesses, and then go from there. I think there's quite a few options that haven't really been explored yet.
Do you feel like this is what you're doing with your CG testing at the minute, your Crucible Guard testing with McKay?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is something that I think Tom has been playing more games with Railless Interceptors than I have. But yeah, one of the things that I do when I look at CID testing is I try to figure out all of the potential synergies that models have, especially in terms of warcasters and support pieces. And then I look at which models do seem to be the most obviously powerful in terms of damage output. And right now we're in week 2 of CID, and the Railless Interceptor is certainly a model that is fast, has a large amount of damage output against a lot of different targets, and is very resilient.
And runs away.
Yeah, exactly. It ticks all the same boxes as the Siege Animantrax. And there are casters that also support it extremely well. What Crucible Guard doesn't have is it doesn't have a lot of buffing support, but it has instead debuffing for the opposition. And once you factor in all of those things, yeah, you can certainly do similar plays.
Cool. Cool, cool. And anything from the Empire Dom, anything from the Scorn that you want to throw in to summarize your journey with the Turtles so far?
Just not that much. Just a fun fact, they are not Turtles, they are Turtras in respect of the Belgian guys. They are living on the land and not in the water, which I always get to hear if I play these, because they want to punish me for playing the martyred.
So you put Turtles on the table and end up with a biology lesson?
Yes.
Wow. Is the thing on top of them, is it actually their shell? Or if they made that and it doesn't have a shell at all?
I don't know.
I'm looking into it. Do some research on turtle biology.
Get your data straight.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you very much for joining us to talk through your journeys with turtles. There are the WTC games from last year, I believe, are up on YouTube. And a lot of the things we've talked about, you'll see Dom exhibiting. One of my favorite games was the one you played against, I think it was the final, against a Vindictus Dude Spam list. And when you first look at that game, it looks really weird, but the turtles kind of go really wide. And then turn bottom of turn one, Dom goes second, the Reavers run backwards away from all of the things, that everything runs away from the zone. And you look at it and then to see actually what ensues is three or four turns of Vindictus just being systematically pulled apart. And I don't know how many models you lose in that game, Dom, but it's not many at all, is it?
I don't have the numbers with me, but I think it's I lose more models to my own attacks or to Breath of Corruption than to his, but I'm not sure.
That's my boy!
Oh dear, it's not what you want, is it?
Yeah, but it looks so, it's so good to watch because it just looks so systematic in how it approaches the game, and also looks so unstoppable. Like, you watch that game and it's really difficult to see what the Vindictus player could have done other than just push scenario. And I think that is, as we talked about initially, because it wants to stay back and shoot, get maximum value and then commit and be beyond retaliation. That's how you win against turtles. You push scenario as fast as you can. So, or as Tom says, like, find a way to get the turtles to commit so it can't play its own game plan. But yeah. Okay, so those are up on YouTube. And I think you'll also see, or next time you watch turtles, if you see what turn the turtles are played on, I think when people lose with that tubby list, you'll find if the turtles went in kind of turn two, turn three, that's typically when people start losing. And when games are going to 5, 6, and 7, that's typically when tubby starts very reliably winning games. So thanks, Don, for coming on and telling us all about that.
For having me.
Indeed, pleasure. Pleasure. What are you playing these days?
I'm playing Trolls Champion Spam.
Champion Spam. On to the next most powerful piece.
Yes.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Best of luck with it. I think you're at the NL Masters in a couple of weeks you're going to be playing at?
Yes, exactly.
Lovely. So if you win that, we'll let you back on, all right?
Oh, perfect. Now I have a goal.
Fantastic. Cool. Excellent. Well, I think we've wrapped it up unless there's anything else from Tom or Pat.
No, we're all done. Thank you very much.
Cheers, guys. See you again.
Bye.